Welcome back. I don't know how long I can talk. I don't know how wide I can open my mouth still. I'm hurt. I am here because my man Jason is back. So I am back. Nothing beats a team like the best. Browner and Lawhead on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. We have a ton of stories for you. We have a ton of things to get to. But before we do any of that, let's say what up to my bro, Jason. What it do, baby?
What up? What up? Good to be back in San Diego where there's some normal temperatures. And
where the hell were you?
Weekend. St. Louis.
What was that like?
Which it could have been worse. It was like it's supposed to be. It was like hundreds of degrees the days before I got there. And it was supposed to like lag on. And then like the heat actually broke. Well, it weather broke enough to be like 88 all weekend, but it was way better than it could have been. But
that's a city 88,
got a brother though. There
there's a lot of humidity in the 88 in St. Louis.
Ooh. Yeah, no, but that was the nice thing. A breeze came through, the humidity dropped a little bit, so it wasn't one of those 88s that felt like 188. It was like it was just kind of a raw 88 still, but like, you know, it's St. Louis, it's still in the city, it's a little steamy, but it could have been a lot worse from the forecast, and but it was fun. One of my brothers, Mike, lives there. He turned 60 years old, so my parents had come to town. One of my sisters, my cousin Tracy, and we had a big shebang with some of his friends. And he lives in a really cool area of St. Louis called Lafayette Park, which is obviously named after the Lafayette, you know, from, you know, history and Hamilton. A lot of people you know, now know Lafayette's impact as a French foreign national that came to help with our independence. And I think he either founded St. Louis or was part of its French. But a lot of interest. He lives in Lafayette Park, which the houses are amazing. They're French Victorians around this beautiful Lafayette Park. And it was a good time. And then I'm just lucky to have gotten home with traveling.
What happened? They ran out.
Well, everything all over. Did you see the news? Like it was just travel. Yeah, I don't know. So weather storms in certain areas, and then I mean St. Louis was fine. And then finally, like once we boarded, like my cousin was flying out of American. She lives in California, my cousin Tracy. And she was flying out of American at a different terminal and was calling me all of a sudden going, is there any seats on your plane? Because I think ours is even going to get canceled. But then she couldn't because their bag was checked. It was a mess. So I'm lucky. I'm actually lucky that I actually arrived like at the time I did at any time, which is like right around 2 p.m. yesterday, because it could have been ugly. I could have been spending another night in St. Louis. Who would have known? So I was one of the fortunate ones that didn't have to get held up too long.
Don, you got some funny travel stories, man. You begin stuck.
Well, it just gets worse and worse. The more you travel, you know, it really does.
Open yourself up to these holes in the travel game.
Exactly right. Like if you only travel a few times a year, you might be in that lucky pool where one time you get like delayed for an hour and it doesn't affect you. But once you do it more and more and all those opportunities keep coming and they start infringing on where you need to be and getting out of one place and trying to get to another and just, And now with shortages of everything, right? We don't have truck drivers. We don't have train operators. We don't have pilots. I mean, like people are just not doing the things that we need the most of. Well, yeah, they just aren't taking those jobs, right? Like we need truck drivers. The supply chain's been a mess for years, actually, in a way.
Yeah.
It's just really showing its head now. We need 50,000 truck drivers. We need a bunch of different pilots. We need a bunch of crane operators. We can't. Infrastructure is slow because we can't build bridges and buildings because we don't have enough people working the machinery. It's crazy how many of those jobs that do so much.
I think what people don't understand.
So employment open.
What people don't understand is the qualifications that are required to do things. So people think you just swing a hammer and it's easy. No, these bridges you build have to last for generations. So you can't just have some Yahoo who filled out an application go down there and pull the sticks and make a bridge. That's not how it works, man. You can't have some Yahoo.
You need land surveyors. Yeah. You need the amount of stuff. Yeah, there's no doubt. And at the pace we we need to not just improve things that have been there forever, the places that we're building new into and excavating new and stretching ourselves, and the amount of more people traveling, wanting to travel, needing to travel. I mean, that just means more pilots, more planes, more traffic. And it's just like my parents left Sunday. I left Monday. My parents left Sunday night, and they waited for, crew members for Sabre delayed 3 hours. Those poor old folks that didn't get into Cleveland until like almost 2 a.m.
So pay people, man.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's just weird that it's like those jobs are out there. Yeah, I mean, truck drivers
pay people
more.
That's it.
Pay people. You'll get more of them, and they would have to work less. That would be nice. That's all this is about. Really,
at some point, everyone's reached a breaking point. That listen, I can't keep bending over backwards for this amount of pay. And now I have you over the barrel. I'm going to exercise the power that I actually have, like you've been exercising over me as a company for decades. And I'm not going to come to work until you pay me X amount, because I know you can't find enough people to do the job. And so, and that's going to hurt people in the short term. But in the long term, it will provide for better living for people. Happier workers mean happier companies.
Yeah.
Mean better products.
When people wanting to go do these things, it's like, why should I go do this? You know?
Yeah.
And it's.
If Deshaun Watson can find 24 massage therapists, I'm pretty sure.
I love your segues. Reel it in.
I'm going to tell you where this went sideways for me. And it literally just happened when I read this article this morning, when the news broke that Deshaun Watson is now settled with 20 of the 24 accusers. And people are like, well, the last four must be people who just jumped in. Like, no, it's the first four that are still holding out. Because I'm pretty sure they want more money, because I can guarantee you the NFL called the Cleveland Browns and said, hey, get rid of this. And the Cleveland Browns called Deshaun Watson and said, whatever it costs, man, get rid of this. We guaranteed all your money. We need to get this out of the way because we need you on the field. And he finally went, all right, whatever, cool. Because he was going to get that contract voided, I'm pretty sure, because of the language in there, because another quote-unquote accuser came up. So he wants to get this out of the way. The Browns want to get this out of the way. The league wants to get this out of the way. Because once this becomes a non-story anymore, Roger Goodell could then get in front of a podium when asked about these allegations and go, this is a settled matter. That is nothing for us to talk about. He settled with the women. He proclaimed his innocence. It's all NDA.
We're moving on.
Right. We're moving forward. There's nothing for us to talk about. He'll be suspended for 6 games. And that's going to be that. And any questions on the matter, I'll refer you to our legal team. That's going to be it. And no one's going to talk about the story. The first game he plays, people will talk about it. The Browns are going to win. He's going to throw 4 touchdowns and 300 yards. And people will pretend like it didn't happen, because I can give you a litany of things from Greg Hardy to Ray Lewis to Kobe Bryant to these people who've done things where in the time that Muhammad Ali, not to compare the two because they're vastly different, but where people were – Michael Vick, where people had these unbelievably hot-tempered allegations levied against them. They went out, went through the dredger.
And sometimes the guilt that was evident on them, they went through the stages of all of it, which Watson will likely not do. I mean, he's gone through 3 grand jury of his peers. I mean, these are, prosecutors don't put grand juries together hoping the thing would skate. You know, they don't just go do that. That doesn't just, so the fact that like 3 grand juries were arraigned and these are grand juries. These are people like you and me and everybody. These aren't, and prosecutors put grand juries together because they think that, hey, all right, like we've got something, or we're at least, we want to put this in the crosshairs. And the grand jury said, no, there's not enough in these stories.
If any district attorney worth their weight wanted, even had the smallest amount of evidence to convict Deshaun Watson of any level of crime, and I mean a misdemeanor, they'd have put that man on trial. Period.
Right.
They didn't have it. And that's why it became civil. Period. End of story. If he was some monster that people have tried to portray him to be, then he would be criminally charged. The idea that this man literally raped 24 women is the way they portray it out in public, and that is not what happened.
Don't you think 911 would have been called once in these situations? I mean, just once. Don't you think 911, or at least the immediate evening of, or like, you know,
a week after, a month after?
I mean, I'm just saying, like, right then and there, in one of these cases, if this guy was as serial as it sounds, he's serial. I mean, I don't know. Now 24 get cleared off the books. The first four are holding out, because if there is any credibility to bringing this, it would be in the first couple of women. Victims,
yeah.
Right. Right. Like, so maybe is it the lawyer's ploy to go, all right, you know, victim 5 through 24, we're going to take this settlement per person, and I'm going to hold out the first four, so your settlements lend even more credibility to the first four that will look as credible for staying into this thing, and we're going to maybe squeeze them for more, and if we can, we'll get I'll dice out a little bit more to each one of you, depending how big that is. Or, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's just,
that's what it sounds like to me. The original four are holding out for more money because now they know he will pay. Rusty Harden is going to get more money because he's going to pay them more money. And that's
his argument could be, look, these weren't the ones that came out of the woodwork. And if anything, if you can accuse that or sling that at all, these are the original. These are the stories that were told way back when, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And he'll be able to pull that string hard for at least those ones.
Any woman who feels like she's been sexually assaulted should be heard. I want to be very clear on something before anyone listening to this takes our comments as we don't believe women. That is not what we're saying. What we're saying is these particular 24 women had him brought up on charges because they believe that they were either harassed or violated sexually in some way criminally. Three grand juries looked at the evidence and said, no, no, no. A civil case, I could sue Jason right now in a civil court because I didn't like something he said. That's the equivalent of what is happening. Because he is a football player, it is being taken out of context, or because people don't read the actual indictments, they'll read one or two cases and go, oh, this guy's a monster. Nobody has sat down and read all 24. They just haven't, because people got a regular life. So if a woman is accusing the man of doing something, she should be heard. She should come forward. And if this man is put on trial and found guilty, he should suffer the consequences. End of story, period, no matter who it is. But if he proclaims his innocence and is willing to fight it, he should be innocent until proven guilty, because that's the way the system is supposed to work. And that's the point of stand that I take on it.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you know, like you said, you know, people can create these civil cases even when there isn't been shown a criminal negligence. You can either be found guilty by the preponderance of the evidence or not, and you know, you can choose to fight it to a degree. And I agree to an extent, depending on how the, you know, whole start of it was. The NFL is going to say, look, we believe that the best course of action here is if you can settle all of these before the season starts, we have a number right now we're willing to offer you.
Yep.
Or because there was rumblings about a 60 game suspension or do it your way, Cleveland and Deshaun, and we'll come with a hammer that you won't ever play football again. So here it is. So come up with a number. I mean, if you got 26 women and 20 of them so far, 22 of them, 20 or 24 so far, I'm sorry, have, what was the number? Did they say it was like a 175,000 is what
I haven't seen what the financial number is.
It's a drop in the bucket if you can get away with, you know, $3 million in settlements over 20 plus people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, and a 6-game suspension for everything else the Browns have desired to invest in this over, you know, year two and beyond, and even into the signing bonus and the guarantees. Like,
he got the money.
he got the money, and it's the best course of action for, you know, the NFL. And I think you're right. I think, you know, we talked earlier, 4-6, depending on how it all went. We're seeing how more things are transpiring in this story as it kind of now today is the kind of the biggest news since the immediate news of all these allegations. And it looks like, you know, the Titanic may just bounce off the iceberg in this one and not take too much water. So it's still more to come, obviously, with four more victims. And
right.
You never know what the next day in the world of, you know, Deshaun Watson may unfold. But so far, like we've said, three grand juries, you know, vehement denials, and kind of at this point probably just, you know, making the smartest move, if this is the way to move him forward, to just either a 6-game suspension and getting himself back on the field, because we've talked, it won't be a story, especially if he starts winning right out of the gate. It'll only right. be a story
if
when they point and go, look at these idiots, they put their money on this guy, he can't even play. So and then losing will still take precedent over what we've already kind of done this by the time that comes along, you know?
You know, speaking of washing your hands of something, so mm-hmm. funny you did the expression, Jason mm-hmm. ripped his hands together as to say, all right, wash my hands of it.
Yeah.
The Nets are doing everything they can to wash their hands of Kyrie Irving. And by everything I mean is now there, whenever a group of people in sports want to be done with something, things start leaking. This story leaked now, and I first heard it on First Take with Stephen A. Smith, that Kyrie Irving would hold his own practices after Steve Nash conducted practice for the Brooklyn Nets. So let me explain what that means. So Steve Nash would go through a practice, okay? Defensive sets, offensive plays we want to run, scouting things of that nature. Kyrie Irving would then get the younger players together, the guys who wouldn't say no to him, and do another right. practice. Now, as bonkers as that sounds, I will try the hardest, even though I am fully against this, to give Kyrie Irving the benefit of the doubt and say he was trying to make sure these young guys got some run. And because he wasn't playing, he needed an extra run. But I don't even believe that as I say it. I just don't at all. Zero.
Yeah, I mean, even if that's part of the case, I mean, is it is that the place and how to do it, right? I mean, your NBA players, no matter who participated, if they did, I mean, they're beholden to the team and the workouts through the team and the games. I mean, their body is being put, you know, in, you know, hey, look. You know, I mean, what if somebody goes down and tears an ACL at a Kyrie practice? you know what I mean? I mean, how does that come out, right? That's like saying, wait a minute, what? After practice, you went down and to a gym in Brooklyn
No.
I'm saying like that's, but if you were like, hey, you know, I mean, were the Nets aware of this?
The Kyrie practice occurred on the same court.
Oh, I get it. What I'm saying is if you had a player that was under contract on your current roster and then you found out that after practice one day, he went down and played some hoops and got some running in a gym in Queens and tore his knee,
right,
you'd be what are you doing? What is wrong with you? Who gave you the okay to do that? Wait, there was other players too? Wait, what? I mean, so the fact that, you know, was it authorized by the Nets to just say, yeah, you know, get some run in? And you know, he wasn't even, for the most part of the season, part of the team. I mean, other than just being the guy in a suit, hoping that, you know, whatever restrictions would be lifted. But until he actually got in towards the end of the game, end of the year. So, I mean, I get to want to stay in shape. And he was obviously still, you know, making sure he was in good shape. You saw him when he came back, he was able to, you know, play log minutes and be effective offensively in just a short time from coming back. So his game was right. And that's important, I guess. Sure. But
as a member of any NBA front office, I don't want this guy on my team. I don't. People is like, oh, he's trying to create leverage because he knows that Kevin Durant won't let him walk away for nothing. And I would, as the team owner, I would get with the GM, I would get with the head coach, and I would all sit down with Kevin Durant, and I would say, do you want to play for the Brooklyn Nets? And whether he says yes or no, that's how I will operate going forward. Because if he says no, because we're going to let Kyrie walk, then I would tell him, pick a team you want to play for, and we'll make it happen. If he says yes, then we're going to say, listen, dude, either you get him under control, or we're going to get rid of him. Because right now, this is all on Kevin Durant to fix, unfortunately for him, but he's put himself in a position relying on somebody who was you could not depend on them. You can depend on us to be right back. Browning and Lawhead on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. Welcome back to the podcast. Welcome back to the show. Browner and Lawhead on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. I'm John Browner. As always, I'm joined by the hilarious and famous, world famous, American traveled Jason Lawhead. Shout out. We are a part of the Kaplan and Crew Great Friends Podcast Network, where you can find all our podcasts in the iTunes podcast store or in the YouTube store under the Kaplan and Crew logo. What up, Jason?
What up, man? Good first half of the show. And yeah, you know, we've been talking basketball, so we haven't really had a chance to talk the whole, you know, legacy of that title.
Let's do it.
Golden State.
Before we do that.
Golden State put together. Go ahead.
I want people to know something. If I sound weird, if I'm coughing or something, I'm on antibiotics because of this. Ugh.
Ow.
I had those things pulled out of my mouth.
Ow.
Apparently, they were not good for my body. And so I am now dealing with the ramifications of being on 3 times a day, some extremely high level of antibiotic, and it is really destroying my throat and my voice. But I'm here for y'all. I'm here for y'all.
Was that the upper or lower?
It was both. The upper had broken, and so the three pieces you see are the broken parts that they had to pull out, which was like pulling out 3 separate teeth. So technically, I had 4 teeth pulled. It was great. It was fun.
Oh man.
So
how did?
Go ahead.
How did it break?
It's been. I told this story on Captain and Crew. I'll share it on this show as well.
I didn't.
No, you're fine.
I didn't hear that one.
So I've been dealing with the pain for like 8 months with the upper tooth being broken.
Back upper,
the,
right?
The back upper wisdom tooth being broken. I could barely like eat anything. I could barely like drink anything outside of room temperature. And I was just kind of living my life because I was used to being in pain. Because I, again, growing up poor, you just kind of, you suck it up, you deal with it, you move on because no one cares about your complaint.
Exactly.
You wake up and you go to work, you shut up. Period. End of story. And so that's what I did. And I had been doing that for 8 months. And when this tooth broke, when the top tooth broke about 8 months ago, it hurt like a mofo. But again, I kept it moving because that's all you can really do. And then when this bottom tooth broke, I just said, nope, no, I can't do that for another 8 months, because it never been a whole year with my mouth just in writhing pain like 4 times a day. And I had them yank them things out, man, and it was painful.
It still is. It's gonna be good after that, like after the penicillin and it heals, it'll be okay, it'll be pain free. What do they say?
That at the end of it, I should be fine because there's no extra work that needs to be done. My teeth overall are sound. I have some cavities that they need to get to on my next visit. But outside of that, the teeth are pretty much good. He said the only thing you have to worry about is the pain that will come in the next couple of days. And it has been pain, and it has been more than a couple of days. Sure. So,
God bless you, brother.
Riding and surviving, baby. The Warriors are back. Not only are they back, they're back on top. Again, a lot has happened since the last time we talked to you guys. The Warriors have won a championship. Brooks Koepka is now part of the LIV Golf Tour. Father's Day sucks. And we'll start with those things. I don't know what to – there's so much floating out there about Steph Curry. There's so much floating around out there about the Golden State Warriors. What I will happily share with people, my perspective is this. The Golden State Warriors are a dynasty. Opinion number one. Number two, if you say Steph Curry needed this finals MVP to be great because he wasn't the bus driver, quote unquote, but then also say Kevin Durant needs to win a championship on his own because he wasn't the bus driver for the other two he won, doesn't make any sense. The idea that the Golden State Warriors won a championship where Kevin Durant was the two-time finals MVP in between the first one and the last one, and people's remarks is that he wasn't the bus driver, but neither was Steph Curry. What kind of bus is this? Like, I'm lost at what they see a bus as. So I think Steph Curry is a top 10 all-time player for more reasons than you can statistically build. But in an era where LeBron James, many call him the greatest player of all time, this man has got four titles and during the same career space as LeBron James. He's equaled him in titles. And before LeBron retires, by the way, he will have more because I believe they're going to win again next year. So the fact that the Warriors were able to win this title has nothing to do with Kevin Durant. It is a full reflection on the Golden State Warriors front office being able to build a team from drafting and smart trades and sticking with the guys that they have financially. And first and foremost, and last but not least, rather, Steph Curry being the superstar that everyone wished they had on their roster. He can play with you. He can play without you. Hats off to him.
Yeah. This one was, you know, I will say this. Steph, for what it's worth, say what you want about him, and some people have over the years because of, you know, the quote-unquote who's driven the bus for these titles. And, you know, this was as rising to the occasion as there's ever been rising to the occasion, in my opinion, and right, ranks right up there. In, you know, Magic's, you know, ability to do it, and Michael's ability to do it, and Tim Duncan's ability to do it, and whether they were always the finals MVP. Michael always was, Magic not, Duncan not. It's quite impressive. I'll say that on a big degree, that I've even some of my criticisms of Steph, knowing how great of a shooter he is and how transcendent of a player he is, I've always given him credit for that. But even some of my critiques were answered in this last run, this whole season. Matter of fact, I've talked throughout the season with you when we talked NBA about how I thought Steph was really, you know, delivering an MVP type of season as a, not just a, you know, player, but as a leader and a captain and a teammate. And to go back to, you know, and so that's being said, you know,
right,
well-deserved finals MVP, not even in question, no matter how great other guys may have stepped up, but to sit, to go back to drive the bus, to go back to this Steph KD debate, what it's worth and all this other stuff. I'll tell you, I really think when you look at who drives the bus here, putting Steph right up there as, you know, the guy that's, you know, going to help grab the wheel. But I think it's Steve Kerr. I think Steve Kerr is the guy that's really proved over the course of this 8 years that he's the guy that was able to put Golden State in all of these situations, no matter who was here, leaving, hurt, in their prime, before their prime, past their prime, all of the different intangibles, all of the personalities. I think Steve Kerr, when you look at being down 2-1 in 2015, to a Cavs team that a determined LeBron, who was, they didn't have much of an answer for at all. They didn't have any when you look at LeBron's stats in the 2015 series. And talk about a guy that was driving a bus with Mozgov's and Dellavedova's and whoever else he had, Varejao's. And Kerr saw that down 2-1, and he went with Andre Iguodala to start, which he hadn't done all year. And Iguodala turned into the finals MVP. And he made those adjustments throughout the series. And even though LeBron had one of the greatest statistical series in the history of the NBA, he made life easy for the Warriors. After they got it to 2-2 and cruised on, those were easy wins for the Warriors going through, right? They were easy wins. Yeah, they give up the 3-1 lead, but a lot of that had to do just with how things happen. That's just that one, right? We look back, it's the only time it happened. LeBron was just those couple of years coming off of Miami. He was so locked in. He was the best player he ever was in his life at that time. The final few years of Miami, the first couple of years back in Cleveland, he had Kyrie focused. He had Love back healthy. You know, it was just a perfect situation. And then, yeah, Durant comes in and they create some all-star team. But guess what? Buzzsaw, buzzsaw, buzzsaw through those two championships. And then got to deal with some adversity, still gets to Toronto, still gets to the finals, gets beat by a good, deep team that was just hot and they were healthier. And he goes through this transformation, down 2-1 against Boston, right? It's back to having Steph. Maybe Klay's a little past his prime. Maybe Draymond's a little past his prime. Maybe a couple of young guys are, you know, pre-prime, but can play. And Wiggins is coming into his. And then he kind of goes and does that again. He comes back from 2-1 down. And they just go, not just beat, I mean, like they did, going away. Mm-hmm. I just think Steve Kerr, man, at the end of the day, this bus has been driven by Steve Kerr. He's had the luxury, obviously, like my dad said. My dad won a lot of games coaching high school basketball. And he goes, yeah, you know, hey, maybe I was a great coach, but you don't win without players. No, but every coach knows that. You don't win without players.
Every smart coach knows that.
You could make a bad team better by being a good, great coach. But you can't win without great players. But Kerr, as you said, he's become that hybrid of Pop and Phil. And I think, you know, he's shown more than Pop and Phil. He's been able to win with a variation of maybe not all the best talent, having the best talent, leaking back off, young, pre-prime, post-prime, during prime. Where all those guys had Kobe and Jordan and the big four that they had in San Antonio through the most of the whole stretch. And when he, you know, when he didn't have Ginobili and Parker, well, he had David Robinson at the back end bringing in. So I just think it's one of the most impressive coaching transformations since the post Durant era and what they've had to go through. And with LeBron coming and try to build a super team in LA and so much other stuff. And, you know, this year, I mean, I think this final showed Steph was the true MVP of this league this season. And Steve Kerr by far was the coach of the year. There's no doubt about it.
I thought at the end of the day, when I looked at this roster and I looked at the season that they had completed, I thought that from top to bottom, this organization, this year, the last 3 years of this organization, there's no team in the NBA that can tell you that they cannot compete. You just can't say that because the Warriors 3 years ago had the worst record in the NBA, the worst record in the NBA. And the person that they got out of that being James Wiseman hadn't even played really yet. So the idea that the number two pick, they did all this with the number two pick not playing and the number seven pick not playing really a meaningful minute in the NBA finals from last year's draft. So if you're the Orlando Magic, if you're the Oklahoma City Thunder, and you're compiling all these picks, this is what you want it to look like. And they didn't do it with number one picks. Steph Curry was the seventh pick. Thompson was the 11th pick. Draymond Green was the second-round pick. Jordan Poole was the late first-round pick. Andrew Wiggins was a trade, which, by the way, no one else wanted.
Right, a guy that everybody was going, he's not getting the most out of his potential. He isn't really what we thought he was going to be. And then, boom, he actually, in the right system, coached under the right guys, played with the right people.
A guy
he is a problem.
A guy who's been aloof his entire career, Otto Porter Jr., came and gave you beneficial minutes. Kevon Looney, a guy who had two hip surgeries, found his footing and became a force in this playoff. All that happened under the tutelage of Steve Kerr and Bob Myers. So this organization, should have every available person plucked from it. I'm talking about coaches, front office members, because this is the how-to going forward on how to build a winning organization with practice, with planning, with preparation, and then execution. And I don't know if other organizations around the league are looking at that with envy or respect. Because also, by the way, the Warriors are supposed to make $700 million this year. They're estimated to make $700 million. The average NBA average NBA franchise makes around $150 to $200 million. They're slated to make $700 million.
It's incredible.
So, the guys are good at what they do. So,
Kerr, I just think that that was the most impressive part of this whole, when you look back on it all and you go, wow, man, when you really look at what Kerr's been able to do and get those adjustments. And, you know, Klay didn't just pop onto the scene this year. He wasn't just all of 100% Klay.
He wasn't great in the finals.
No, he wasn't.
And Draymond Green was bad for 4 to 6 games.
Right, and he coached around all of that.
Yes.
And, he coached around all of that. He coached around Jordan Poole looking like he was all NBA early in the playoffs against certain matchups. And then he coached around Jordan Poole just getting the most out of him he could get in these types of gritty finals against a team that wasn't going to let Jordan Poole just go crazy like the Memphis Grizzlies or somebody like that was going to make, you know. So, he coached around so many things. And I just think at the end of the day, you know, we should be looking at Steve Kerr in this whole argument. Leave Steph, leave Durant alone about it. Who's did what for what. And let's start getting to the, you know, real bare kind of essentials of this whole thing and putting Steve Kerr on that pedestal to say it could have been Durant. It could have been somebody else that would have came in that year, another whole high profile player. And guess what? They would have won 2 titles in a row anyway.
Now, another organization that's ran just absolutely poorly is the PGA. Listen, I got to tell you, man, this looks like to me what UFC did to boxing, but it's moving at the speed of a bullet, and UFC was more of on a crawl to walk situation. This thing looks like it is sprinting Usain Bolt speed past the PGA. I don't know who the PGA thought they could bully. I don't know what they thought they could do to maintain these players. They relied heavily on tradition, not realizing the only thing that trumps tradition is money, baby. And the Saudis broke out the bank because now Brooks Koepka will now be joining that tour. And I think Phil Mickelson took the most arrows because he was first. He proved that he would not have been last. Like Brooks Koepka on this... at the level of stars in golf, the man is a star, period. And now the LIV tournament has half the big names from the PGA Tour in their tour. And I think the PGA, we're going to watch the PGA die off because it was a poorly ran organization and it were only successful because there were no other options. Now there are other options. It appears they are running out of rope.
Well, sadly, it's going to, you know, the one thing I will say for the PGA and its existence pre this LIV, you know, tournament is it's too bad because it really was a great vehicle to watch competitive golf. I think the one thing LIV's going to do is, it's going to spend money. And yet it's torpedoing the PGA Tour right now and it's changed the game. In the sense that I think we're all going to lose out as fans that love more than just the majors. I guess the majors will always be there. The Masters will always be there because it's an event bigger than just golf. It, you know, the PGA, it's its own entity, just like the U.S. Open and all the majors. The PGA Championship, I guess, could stand on its own and just not let anyone – other than the exemptions it's already given out. I mean, once it gives those exemptions out, I believe that those suspensions
exemption supersede the expansion. So if you won the PGA Championship before, I'm not sure the exact details of that.
The way it has been explained to me is that all PGA Tour events,
right,
like the majors, the guys on the LIV Tour can still play in the majors.
And right,
The last holdup from guys going over there.
They can play in the majors as long as they qualify for the majors. Right, yes.
Right.
And, the thing is this. All I know is this. When people say, well, the PGA, a competitor was going to come along, but it wasn't. Because nobody was going to pay this. Saudis have this kind of money. So the PGA, you can't blame them for never seeing this coming. Because no one in their right mind, the Saudis will take losses. Nobody's going to watch these events. Nobody's watching these events. Nobody cares about 54 holes of golf. Nobody cares about team golf. Nobody cares about guys that have already been pigged off at the trough coming in there to knock it around for 3 days. Nobody cares about that. You know what they care about? They care about watching this kid Fitzpatrick they've never heard of before come up on a Sunday and chase a guy named Zalatoris, who they've just recently heard of, but they liked him because he put up a fight in the Masters, and last year at the U.S. Open, he placed in the top five, and they like to know that maybe even if they've heard of a Jon Rahm, he's in the mix and he faded, or Rory can be watched and he faded, and a guy can come up the side around the edge on a Sunday at a Brookline where it's hard to score if you're a golf fan at the U.S. Open, and yes, you'll still get that because it's a major, but you also get that oftentimes at the Memorial, at the Players' Championship.
The PGA Tour better hope you're right and the LIV tournament is wrong, because if the LIV tournament gets a hot young golfer, all bets are off. Well, our bet is on. We'll be back tomorrow. Right. Brown and Lawhead.
Peace.